You're listening to Goodfellas Minute 24.
I know I'd go from rags to riches if you would only say you can.
Hello, welcome to Goodfellas Minute, the only podcast that analyzes the Martin Scorsese film Goodfellas one restaurant touring minute at a time. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. With me are Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
And Ron Richards.
Listen, restaurants are hard business. You got to give respect to the restaurateurs.
And joining us for the fourth day in a row is Tom Merritt. Hey, Tom.
Hey, thanks for having me.
No problem. Thanks for being here. Tom's the host of the Daily Tech News Show, Sword and Laser, Current Geek, Cord Killers, all kinds of podcasts. You can find him all over the internet. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
So let's kick this minute off. It begins with Tommy attacking the poor waiter and then ends with Sonny complaining to Polly about Tommy.
What is that waspy waiter doing there?
He doesn't even fit, does he?
No.
Well, yes, he does, though, because it's an accident. It's a tiki bar. It's a tiki restaurant. He's a perfect waiter for a tiki restaurant.
Is he?
Yeah.
Is it really a tiki restaurant, though?
He's not Polynesian.
It's true.
Well, it's important to note that he is played by actor Paul Mugi.
I was going to say Mugi.
He's played by Paul Inesian.
Paul Mugi, who plays terrorized waiter. Paul is from Mineola, so it makes complete sense that he'd be there.
Mineola is on Long Island, for those who don't know.
Scion of Long Island. And he was only in one other film, New York Stories, in which he played Guy at Blind Alley.
God, so I wish he was somebody terrified, the terrified bus patron.
He's an established Broadway actor. He made a nice little career for himself.
Sure, but just one other film.
So what you're saying is that the show that you haven't seen was better than the movie that he's in you have seen.
Yeah, maybe.
Said your mom.
Was he in Goodfellas the musical and the waiter had a song about being terrorized?
Yeah.
You're a funny guy. Hey.
He's got a big lay on his neck, too, which is good.
So before we get to Sonny and Polly, let's talk about the end of the scene in which Tommy goes after the waiter. I thought it was really, and we mentioned this on, I think, Monday, but now let's talk about how the rest of the restaurant reacts to the scene in which they all think it's hilarious.
Yeah. Well, yes and no. I mean, this is the moment that the rest of the restaurant becomes aware of Tommy as he chases Sonny and then terrorizes the waiter. But there's one couple to the left of Tommy who they get like a bat out of hell. They run away.
Right.
Did you notice that? Yeah. Did you notice that? It's before Tommy throws the ice bucket at the waiter, and there's a woman with in a sparkly dress and I guess her date or significant other, and he grabs her and gets out. And there's another woman who's got her hand over her mouth. Like, there are shocked people in the restaurant as well.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
But they also, I still think it's protective laughter, right? It's like, we better laugh at this guy.
Yeah.
Well, here's what I want to know. How many of those people in there are citizens? How many are part of the party? Because this thing has been going on a long time. And there's no doubt that if you aren't part of that party, they're super annoying.
Yeah.
So, like, they came in and they want to have a nice dinner and they're like, oh, these people have been horrible the whole
time. Yeah, but the thing is, growing up in that area, who they are, so they're not annoying.
Where was the Bamboo Lounge? It was in Manhattan, right?
No, it was in Rockaway.
What was the one?
It was shot in Manhattan.
Oh, right. The actual location.
Yeah, the actual restaurant was in Rockaway. And Connor, I mean, I don't know. I question whether or not your average Joe citizen who's got no exposure to this and you decide you want to go to the nice Polynesian restaurant that your coworker told you about, there's a chance that you go in not knowing who those guys are.
Sure, of course. There's a chance one or two do, but I grew up in Queens. Everyone knew who's in those neighborhoods.
There had been The Godfather, and there had been other things like this. There wasn't those things before this.
People absolutely 100% knew who these guys were.
Yeah, no, I'll go back to stories my dad told me, and he in the 50s and 60s, he said you knew who not to mess with.
Yeah.
It's even in this movie. Everyone in the neighborhood knew who these guys were, and that's part of it.
The guys with the fresh bread.
Well, and sort of the theme of these past few minutes is that people laugh at the wrong things.
Yeah.
So when he goes after the waiter and throws the ice bucket, that's when you still see people kind of like, oh, what's going on? And I know we haven't got there in the description of the minute yet, but when he pulls the gun out and jokingly, that's when you see everybody in the restaurant cracking up.
The entire restaurant loses it.
That's my note. Yeah. No one seemed bothered by the fact that he used the gun pointed at his friend's face as a prop
right.
in a joke.
Yep.
A loaded gun.
Mobsters. This might the point that I took out of this minute is that mobsters take no personal responsibility.
Interesting.
For anything. Like and Tommy is blaming everybody else for what happened.
Yeah.
It's Sonny's fault. It's the waiter's fault. He tells
Henry, you should be doing stuff like this.
Henry should be doing
that
line's almost a different thing. You should be doing stuff like this. So he's acknowledging to a certain extent that it's an act.
Yeah. And then even when he sits back in his chair and tells the joke, he goes, yeah, just last week that guy asked me to christen his kid. I'll do it for $7,000. That now he's performing.
Right.
Like he knows the entire restaurant's looking at him and he's getting a laugh, you know?
There's definitely an aspect of doing what you're expected to do, which is be a tough guy and act a certain way. And that's what he's telling Henry. Henry has to be a tough guy too. Yeah.
Can we go back to the gun for a moment?
Sure.
Sure.
Okay. He's not wearing a belt.
And it's been there the whole time.
And now listen, I don't have much experience handling guns, but the few guns I have held, they get some weight to them. And I just feel like a loaded gun tucked in his pants like that would A, not be very comfortable, but B, also be kind of unsafe.
Bit of chafing.
So, yeah. What if he drops it through his pant leg?
I don't know how to answer these questions.
I'm just saying, if he was wearing a belt, I would have a little more confidence in it. But there's not even anything like, no, shouldn't he have a holster or some sort of thing to put the gun in? No, he just tucks it in his pants. That's weird.
Easy access.
Yeah.
They take no personal responsibility.
Yeah.
There you go.
They're not thinking things through.
Right.
Moving to the next scene.
Well, hang on. What else I got
here? Any more from the Bamboo Lounge?
I think that when we're talking about that act, is just the only thing that came out of it is that Tommy is, as a character, is an excellent improviser. You have to give him credit. He's witty. He's quick. He knew a callback. He knew how to do all that stuff. And he might have had a different career at a different time.
Well, you grew up with these guys. They're funny.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And this is almost a lesson on comedy. That was a very good point, Josh, about the callback.
Well, and we had a middle scene I guess it was 2 minutes ago, where people were seriously worried when there was no reason to be worried. And here we have an ice bucket thrown, we have a gun pulled, and then at the very end of this scene, in this minute, we see Tommy actually jump on Henry.
He leaps out of the frame.
And we never find out what happens. Like, what happened then? Like, did he land on Henry? Like,
everyone was clustered together.
Yeah.
So Nicky Eyes got knocked over. B, they're getting up. Then this is touching. They're going to be uncomfortable with each other. Somebody's going to get mad. There was a whole other thing. We decided it would just repeat it.
The jump is weird. The jump. I got to be honest. The jump is weird. Right?
Yeah, it is. It's very stagey.
Yeah.
And I don't think he'd have done it. I don't feel like I don't see any scene where these guys are like wrestling with each other.
Right. No.
And that's that outside the cab stand.
Yeah, but yeah, they were rolling around on the ground, which is what that jump would have resulted in.
Yeah. If you want to have some fun, pause the movie right before the jump and look at the bug-eyed open mouth shot of Henry laughing at what's going on. It's very disturbing.
So many wonderful freeze frames.
Yeah. So I like the gear shift move between moods in the scene where we've got everyone laughing and the hysterics of the restaurant, and then it cuts to the aftermath and we get the shot of poor Sonny with the bandage on his head.
Don't you think that Sonny would have bled a lot more?
Well, this is the next day, clearly. Yeah,
yeah. No, I mean this would happen. I mean this happened in the scene. He gets smashed in the face with the head with a glass, and the head wounds bleed like crazy.
They do, yeah.
Sometimes they don't bleed right away, though.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
So we're the next day when Paulie is having a sit down with Sonny about what's going on with Tommy at the Bamboo Lounge, all the money he owes him, and how he's terrorizing him. And Sonny, we get a few seconds of Sonny complaining to Paulie.
So here's a question.
Yes.
Where are they?
A different restaurant.
An old folks home.
It seems like it. Do you notice? Did you spot behind Sonny? Who's behind Sonny?
No.
It's Tony Stacks and Mystery Mobster, Mr. Ronnie.
Well, I assume that's Polly's muscle.
Yeah.
They follow him around.
I think this is above the cab stand, or this is where when Tootie was giving Henry the numbers to go?
Maybe it's a social club somewhere.
Yeah, maybe something. Yeah, I think
I don't know if you're me. You're pretty excited about the next 70 seconds you've got of
Paulie. Oh yeah, oh yeah,
of Paulie. Because basically, right now, he puts on a whole show of his own. he doesn't want to be bothered.
This is just the beginning. This is just the tip of the iceberg.
He's already exasperated by whatever's about to happen.
Well, we're going to get to that tomorrow because there's a lot more of that.
We're touching on it, though. He's already exasperated.
He's annoyed.
He gives the first great look.
Sonny asked a good question, and I'll throw it to you, Ron. You might know. Why can't Polly just take care of Tommy? Clearly, he's a headache. Polly says it's a headache. He causes him all kinds of trouble. Why can't he take care of him?
Because there's no reason to.
He's an earner.
He's a good soldier. He's a good earner, and he hasn't crossed the line yet.
Polly's glad-handing, too.
Yeah.
Polly, you know, he's, what do you want me to do about him? But really, he's more valuable to him than Sonny is, so.
Yeah. At least at this moment, and we'll find out more. Yeah, yeah.
I think he's just feeding him a line. He's just playing it cool. That's what I think Paulie's doing. I don't think he's all that concerned about these kids, as he puts it. These 47.
Oh, Paulie just wants
kids.
Sonny to go away. Yeah.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you want me to do?
Or doesn't he? That's a question we're gonna answer in the next minute, I think.
I mean, it's just funny how the idea of the this happens, and so Sonny goes right to Paulie. Like he goes, you know, like this is, you know, like it's like going to like tattling, you know, like
we've
going,
already
going,
established yeah, that Sonny yeah. doesn't understand how things work.
Well, it's not tattling; it's going to the guy's boss. You're having trouble. This guy owes you $50,000, so he's not going to pay you. So you got to go to his boss. That's the way it works.
I feel like and maybe I'm wrong. I've never been in the mob. But I feel like
I need to interrupt you. The mob doesn't exist. The mafia.
Right. I've never been in the imaginary mob that doesn't exist, except for the purposes of this movie. But wouldn't you just like not confront Tommy? And if you can go to Polly, if you can go have an audience with Polly, why don't you just go to Polly and say, "Hey, look, Tommy's been running up a big debt. You know, it's starting to cut into the business, which is bad for everybody. What do we do?"
Yeah. I could see that. I would just think, knowing the looks that Polly gives and the you need a really good reason to go talk to Polly.
Like you need a head wound.
Yeah. And I think we're going to talk about this in the next minute, I think.
Yeah. But, yeah. Let's talk about Polly's jacket.
Uh-oh. He's
not a fan.
Really?
Not a fan of this blazer.
Does it seem anachronistic? Does it seem like it's in the right place?
It does. It does. It seems later.
It seems like an 80s jacket, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes.
He's fashion forward.
I don't believe he is. I'm afraid I'm going to have to disagree with the police work there, Tom.
Is the guy sitting behind Polly wearing a yellow cardigan from earlier in the movie?
Could be.
Possibly. I hope so.
Maybe they keep him there just in case it gets cold and you forgot to bring a jacket.
Earlier, Jimmy pointed to the box of cardigans and he said, "Keep him here."
I will give Polly credit for the open shirt and the undershirt underneath and the gold chain. It's all a very good look. It's all working together. And the big old cigar. I mean, it's the perfect. This is we haven't seen Polly since the Sausage and Peppers. And, you know, this shows us why Paul's.
No, we saw him briefly in the at the club. The gambling den.
Where we meet Jimmy.
Oh, right. Yeah, you're right. Yes, you're right. Yeah. And Sonny's wearing a collar with not much of a gap over the tie. So,
well, it shows you his standing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm completely down. This theory of the collar gap, I think, is going to, it's the key to the whole world. If the FBI had been onto that, this would have all been over.
I would like to point out, at the very end of the minute, you get a good look at Polly's chain, and on the chain is the Italian horn. Which, if you don't know about the Italian horn, that is a common gift or chain, you know, type thing or whatever. It's called a cornicello, and it's the shape of a horn. It's like an amulet that is meant to be worn to protect against the evil eye.
What's great is that when you said Italian horn, you had three guys who are not Italian in the most abject silence. You said Italian horn, and we were just like,
No, I should explain. It's not a horn like a trumpet. It's a horn like a bull, you know, like a ram horn or whatever it is. Yeah, I was given one of these when I got communion, I think. And I wore it for a couple of years and then stopped wearing it because it's really tacky.
Oh, man. Yeah, all I got was a scapula for when I did communion.
It's being Italian in New York is tough sometimes. But yeah, many of my relatives all had the Italian horn around their neck. And
evil eye, you got to worry about.
Evil eye. It's a real thing.
It's no joke.
So the cornicello or cornetto is the horn. So there you go.
Cornetto and cappuccino.
Yep. That's all I got. That's all I got for this minute.
This minute's fun fact is at one point, Sonny says something to the effect of, "What should I be, a Lannister?" And I thought very close to being a Lannister, but no.
Lannister.
I thought maybe he made that word up. No, apparently not. It's a word meaning to go on the lam, and some people say it goes back to the 1800s.
Yeah. So get out of town. You gotta go on the lam.
Go on the lam. Yes, but to be a Lannister is a phrase I've never heard before.
That's why the Lannisters send their regrets.
Dun 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 dun. Lannister.
You ready for the fuck count?
All right, bring it on.
Absolutely.
Fuck count's high in this minute. It's eight fucks.
Wow.
And the reason for that is Sonny comes in strong with the fucks in this minute and the next one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So eight. We're currently pretty high, and we're gonna have a pretty high total tomorrow. So
congratulations to Mr. Sonny Buns of Queens, New York, for really ramping up the fuck.
Ramping the fuck up.
Very good. Anybody got any other notes for this minute?
I'm good.
All right. That's it for minute 24. Thanks, Tom, for joining us.
Thank you for having me, as always.
Let's name another place people can find you that's not your website or Twitter.
TomMerrittBooks.com.
Oh!
Wow.
Tom is also, in addition to being the greatest podcaster on the internet, he's also an accomplished author.
Well, I'm an author. I wrote stuff.
Cool.
Well, you can tune in tomorrow for minute 25, Tom's last minute with us this week, and until then, you can check us...
So you got to be careful about how you say things sometimes. It's just,
Until then,
you can this week made me feel a lot better. I'll just say that.
Check us out on Twitter at GoodfellowsMin and on Instagram and Facebook at GoodfellowsMinute. And you can find all of our episodes at GoodfellowsMinute.com. And you can support the show by going to patreon.com/GFM or at GoodfellowsMinute.com/support, where you can shop via Amazon. And tomorrow, we'll be spotlighting our first patron from Patreon, who will be getting his very own Mafia There's No Mafia nickname. And then that's it. Till tomorrow, I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
I'm Josh.
Or will I go from rags to riches? My fate is up.